Welcome to This Week in Pubathon, Episode 5. The oyster paper has left the building. In this week's episode, we will have Shelley here as the last time as a postdoc. Next time she will simply be a temp. We will go deep into everyone's goals for over the next week and start off with Catherine joining us and again hearing about her breakfast. And for the last time, we will get to the answer to the question, when is that paper going to be done?
The oyster paper will be done by Tuesday.
Catherine, we've already gone over breakfast. What are you eating? Are you eating something healthy?
Yeah, I'm having a cheese and fruit box from Starbucks.
Oh, very nice.
Not cost effective, but it is healthy.
All right, we're just going back up the list of folks about where they are, what they're doing. I don't know. Let's go ahead and hit you, Catherine, with your goals from last week. And then we'll circle back. Catherine has, it looks like she has two goals from last week. Do one more analysis. Did you do one more analysis?
I didn't work on this paper at all. I was interviewing undergrads all week for this working group thing. So yeah, I failed, but it's okay.
All right. Just a little prefix. Everybody's really up. They're really stacking their scores pretty high this week. You weren't here for that. But I'm so on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give yourself for doing nothing?
I felt bad about not doing anything.
I think you should give yourself at least a 5.
Okay. If Shelley gives me a 5, I'll take a 5.
How bad did you feel? That's how we determine if it's a 5 or not, I guess.
I guess I didn't feel that bad, but I feel like that's a good thing because you should not beat yourself down. When you don't get to
just enough goals. To recognize that you shouldn't feel bad.
Yes. Okay. Exactly.
That sounds like a 5. All right. So now we were kind of just going through what everybody else, what they're working on this week. I don't know. We'll hit back to you. So I get organized. Catherine, how about this week? What are your goals for this week?
Just want to carry you over
from last week?
Yeah, okay. We'll have the same goals.
All right, on my list, I'm going back up hitting Yamini. Yamini, what are you going to do this week?
I think I want to write up the results that I have so far for the Hawaii paper, and then write the methods for the Manchester paper. And then I'm trying to figure out. I'm going to try aligning both data sets. I'll probably just start with one. So I'm going to try aligning at least one of those data sets to the new revised genome to see what that's like. Yeah. I also need to figure out, I guess, if that Roslyn genome does have the mitochondrial genome sequence or not. Yeah.
So what two things do you have efforts now? Or are you just talking about the Hawaii stuff?
Hawaii and Manchester.
So you're kind of running those at the same time?
Kind of, yeah. Like the Hawaii one's more complicated because it's got two variables, but the Manchester one is more straightforward. But it's like basically doing the same analysis, more or less. So,
all right, sounds good. All right, Shelley. Shelley says she's done. She's leaving us. She's going on to a bigger and better thing. We'll never see us. She will never come do Pubathon again. She's going to squeeze everything in by Monday and win it all.
Last ditch effort, submit 4 papers by Monday. Oh man, no, it should be. I think next week is going to be like kind of mellow ish so at the new, because I start Monday, so. But yeah, my plan is to
you have to be off for Pubathon every Friday.
Yes,
right,
every week.
You negotiated that as part of your contract.
Mm-hmm. And
do you have a job? Did I miss a job announcement?
Yeah, I'm starting a job Monday, it's like a Gloucester Marine Genomics Institute in Massachusetts.
Yes, I feel like we talked about that. That's yes. So awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. It should be cool. I'm going to be doing lab work. So, and analysis stuff. It's like an assay development project and some analysis projects. But yeah, I'm still planning to attend Pubathon meetings for sure. And it's good because it's like lunchtime here. So this can be like lunch break. And then what else? I stick and do the GUI Duck meeting and actually both GUI Duck meetings. So things will get done. Have a good feeling. Goals. So goals for next week. Well, one is we have to do something about our coral paper because it got rejected from genome biology. They didn't think it was enough of an advancement, which is like such a bummer because it's pretty cool.
I just assumed Hollywood's going to take care of that and send it to Emmy, to Molecular Ecology Resources. That was my feeling from the chat. No, you don't think that she's doing that?
I don't know. Okay. I just don't know if there's actually like decisions in terms of like who's doing what with it, or like if anything needs to like, we were just talking about changing the cover letter.
Yeah.
We probably need to do some. Right. So we probably need to do some element of reformatting too.
Yes. So let's make this. So how about one goal is to keep the ball rolling with that.
Okay.
Keep the ball rolling with the coral paper, and that entails like kind of deciding who's doing what in terms of reformatting cover letter. And possibly abstract edits, just to make sure that like that our really cool findings come out in the paper, that it's more obvious. And then another goal is to keep going through the GUI Duck genome paper. So that is what, so continuing to update the figure table formats, and it would be really, really nice to finish the discussion. So I think that will be the goals.
Basically go through and review the OSF repo now that it's under the space quota, and I guess continue to read through that manuscript. I think that's it.
Ooh, all right. Laura, you were going to kind of show us a few things in relation to what you had been working on for feedback, I think, and then maybe talk about what's next.
Yep. I'm going to try to share my screen. Are you seeing my PowerPoint?
Yes.
Okay. So So I'll just give you a quick overview of what I'm doing, and then I'll show you how I did them. And then if you guys have any comments, that would be awesome. So I did that Olympia oyster carryover effect study where parents were exposed to different pH conditions or PCO2 conditions. And then like in a year following, the offspring were deployed across Puget Sound in four different locations. And we had like in a couple of the populations, we had differing survival between parental PCO2 exposure, most dramatically in the Fidalgo Bay group, but also in the Daybob Bay group. And I selected one at the Port Gamble Bay location. The difference was the most dramatic, I guess. And the Port Gamble Bay had the lowest pH compared to all the locations. So I decided to check out gene expression in these groups deployed at Port Gamble Bay. So I have 16 QuantSeq libraries, four from each box plot. And here is the PCA of gene expression, and it shows clustering by both population and parental PCO2 exposure. So now the question is, are these guys, are each of these points that are colored differently, is this difference in expression, can we attribute it in part to parental exposure, or is it like exclusively due to genotype potentially? So that's why I went down this process of calling SNPs and then doing some genetic analysis. So Catherine suggested I work on, So like, are all these red dots siblings or half siblings? And that's why we see different patterns of gene expression. Feel free to jump in if you guys have questions.
Hold on, just slow down a bit just so I can fully grasp. So the question is whether, or what we're really seeing here is difference attributed to the fact, let's say for Daybob, for example, that it's really an ambient high, or is it just by chance that those four, it's a family effect?
Is that what you're kind of thinking?
Okay. And the same thing with the Hidalgo and Daybob. Are we, mm-hmm. well, that's, I mean, we kind of assume those are genetically different.
Totally.
Really just an in population genetic assessment to see if we can tease out if the ambient versus high is really driving it versus family.
Yeah, exactly. So I was, you know, because of the experimental design, it's not like I took siblings and split them off into different places in the field. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So I want to know, was there selection that occurred from after spawning the adults to deploying the offspring that is influencing expression patterns in the offspring?
Right, I'm sorry, because the ambient high refers to parents'
exposure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's even more relevant there because of selection. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Can I ask a question about the experiment?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. So like you collected adults from these different areas and then exposed them. And then
they're actually F1 offspring. They were hatchery reared adults, but their parents were collected from the wild, from these different populations in Puget Sound. So
I see.
So like in 2013, for an experiment run by Stephen's former student, they collected from different places, brought them in all into the same hatchery, bred them, and then mm-hmm. I'm using those offspring.
Okay. So they're like, it could make sense that there's this genetic history that could be like whatever behind all.
There's definitely, we would definitely expect differences between like Daybob Bay and Fidalgo Bay genetically, but I was hoping that, you know, the offspring that I deployed in this, what I'm showing you here, were maybe like a mixture of genotypes. I was hoping not to see a strong genetic component in these offspring that I experimented with. It's pretty complicated, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because you can't, with Olympia oysters, you don't know who's the parent and who, like, who's the, how many females and how many males are involved in a cross, because you just like put them in a bucket. And so, yeah, like they could just be all siblings.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, we wouldn't know except for the genotyping.
And just a question about this survival, the animals that were exposed to, yeah, what are the gray, what is the shading?
So the, yeah, sorry, I just pulled this from a different plot. That's the shading is parental PCO2 exposure. So for example, in the Fidalgo Bay, this is survival. Each point represents like a little cage of oysters, and that's like overall survival in that cage. Mm-hmm. And gray is parents who's were not exposed to high PCO2, and dark gray is parents whose oysters whose parents were exposed to high PCO2.
Cool. Okay, I'm remembering now.
Okay.
When you presented this.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So this is, yeah, this PCA is showing like patterns of gene expression, which is pretty cool. I mean, it's cool to see differences between the population at this stage anyway, but I want to know, like, can I believe the differences between the parental PCO2 exposure? Or is that just due to the genotype? Okay, so I have 16 samples, their whole bodies, all ground up together, and the library prep was using the quantseq method. So this is a lot, but these are all, so I used the GATK toolkit, and I basically just followed their, to their, like, all their instructions online. I did one, I'm not going to go into it right now, but there's one thing that I did that I probably didn't have to do. But anyway, I started with the BAM files that were aligned using Bowtie 2 against the genome. I already had these files. The GATK program recommends using the star aligner, but I actually use Bowtie 2 with local alignment, which should be pretty good pretty good method. And I already had those files. So I just moved forward with that. I did deduplicate and for this workflow and average duplicate level according to, they use Picard, but the average duplicate level was 68%, which is pretty high. But I looked at some of the stuff in IGV and I think it did a pretty good job actually of removing duplicates. So I'm going to try to go back and use the deduplicated data for the gene expression stuff. But anyway, I digress. The next step that's recommended was to do split read spanning splice events. So I did that using their split end cigar reads tool. And then you need to have a read group assigned in order to call variants. I didn't have that. So I just added, like, they all have the same read group because they were all sequenced in the same lane. And then finally I use the haplotype caller step. And this is like this is where it assesses each locus for a potential variant. Here I used, based on one of their instruction manuals, I used it in this, I really can't remember what ERC stands for, but it's a specific mode that allows you to then do joint genotyping. So I believe that, Catherine, you can step in if you know all about this, but I think that means that you're not just like looking at one sample to try to genotype, you're assessing SNPs across all samples at the same time. These two steps, after calling variants, I had to aggregate all the samples across each chromosome, but the Olympia oyster genome has tons and tons of contigs. And so this step took a really long time. So I didn't use every single contig. I selected only the contigs for which I had quantseq data. It cut down the time, but it still took like 4 days. And then this produced about 56,000 potential variants. And then I did some hard filtering based on recommendations on the GATK website. I set the read depth had to be 10, the depth of 10, and then these other settings. And then the output one VCF file. Okay, that's 10 steps.
Did you filter by minor allele frequency or by missing data? So like SNPs that aren't found in most individuals?
Nope, I didn't. This is all the filtering that I did here.
Okay, cool.
So is that something you're recommending or you're just curious?
Yeah, I would definitely filter by missingness because of these 33,000 loci, maybe like 10,000 of them aren't genotyped in most individuals.
Okay.
And therefore they won't be informative for like downstream analyses.
So the read depth is read depth per sample. So would that do that? It's not read depth across all samples. It's each sample had to have at least 10 reads at that site.
Yes. Yeah, that should do it as far as my understanding. I mean, I'll double check the parameters,
mm-hmm.
but the way you describe it sounds like it will, but I don't know 100% for sure. And then minor allele frequency, you definitely do, even if it's just like 1%
mm-hmm.
or something, because those will be like more informative. And sometimes you get singletons. So it's like all individuals have one allele and then one individual has a different allele. And that could be real, but with some of this stuff, it could be just like an artifact of the genotyping.
Okay.
So it's like genotyping error, basically.
Yeah.
And so throwing those out makes your data a lot less noisy.
Okay. So you said filter for missingness, which is probably achieved by the read depth thing, but then the minor allele frequency is something I need to address. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll double check the read depth, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what I did. I then just kind of scoped the web to see if there was a nice quick and dirty tutorial for analyzing SNP data. And I found the Snipper Relate package. So this is what I did. It was a very quick process. So if there's another better package that I should use, keeping in mind that there's a pretty steep learning curve for me for this stuff. So this was great. So I did a PCA. First, I, based on their recommendations, I pruned the SNPs to remove the ones that are in linkage disequilibrium. They suggested that, and that resulted in 7,000 loci. And this is the PCA with those, with that data. And so Daybob Bay is in black and red, and Fidalgo Bay is in blue and green. And so this is showing that there's, within these samples, there's, you know, a lot more divergence between the Daybob Bay population or within the Daybob Bay population than in the Fidalgo Bay population. So, and then there's, I have a bunch of FST values. So FST among all the oysters was 0.14, between the two populations, not considering the parental PCO2, was 0.09. Within the Daybob Bay was 0.11, and then within the Fidalgo Bay was 0.06. And just going from looking at what we had, Catherine, in our other paper, these values seem really high, but I don't really know. I haven't dug into what that might mean and how they're calculated. So.
Yeah, your FST between Daybob and Fidalgo, I think, is actually like right in line. Yeah, like FST can often be like qualitative because there's just like a lot of filtering decisions that could shift that number, but like 0.09, I think, is like very close to what we have between Oyster Bay and Daybob Bay from the RAD data. So that looks good. And yeah, the FST within, that's sort of like your, I think that's maybe inbreeding. Mm. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. Because within a population, FST usually means that you have like multiple groups. So yeah, I'm not 100% sure how you got to like FST within a population.
I calculated FST and I subsetted the data to only include the Daybob Bay, for example, and then the factor that I compared was parental PCO2. So, okay.
I see. Yeah. So you're comparing like FST between the PCO2. Yeah. I mean, I think that is kind of informative because it's showing that there is like strong-ish genetic differences between the two treatments for Daybob Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a conclusion from this could be that maybe I should just, you know, the Daybob Bay group, I shouldn't draw any conclusions when it comes to gene expression, but maybe I could dive deeper into the Fidalgo Bay group potentially. But I'll show you I have a couple more plots, but I'm now really interested to see like, what is the relatedness of these samples versus all the larvae that I started with? So I could rerun this whole pipeline with the larvae and the juveniles, and then I could compare, you know, are these differences that I'm seeing here minor compared to what I started with, or are they pretty strong, you know?
Yeah.
And then that tutorial, this is all the different PC axes, which is a nice little plot, but I thought I would just go to this. I have never done this before, an identity by state analysis, and then it spits out another clustering analysis here. And then I have this hierarchical analysis here and then a heat map here. So it again shows really big differentiation within the Daybob Bay population, less so in the Fidalgo Bay population. I mean, it's still there, but it's not as strong. So
can you actually go back a slide?
Sure.
The PCs.
Yep.
So yeah. If you look at, what is that? PC1 versus PC3. It's like the third plot from the top on, PC3, that actually is splitting out Fidalgo Bay.
Totally.
Yeah, I think that maybe suggests that there is some genetic differences between found within Daybob Bay and within Fidalgo Bay.
So now I have to just decide like, in the FST value, it's 0.06, but it's still not nothing. So I have to decide basically, you know, how do I, maybe I could try to do some fancy analysis where I take into account relatedness and try to look at gene expression.
So yeah, one, I don't know if you get to this, but there's something called colony. And that's actually what I use in my like scientific reports paper with these populations. And like that tells you how many full SIB families you have in your data. Cool. And so like that gives you like a clear cut, like these are full SIBs or these are half SIBs or yeah. So I think that might be a little more useful for like knowing exactly how related these groups are.
Yeah.
And how related they are inside of the groups.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Can I try to like summarize what you're saying to make sure I'm like understanding this? So you did a like this genetic analysis on your TagSeq data.
Yes.
Okay. And then you're actually seeing that within your populations that show different phenotype, that there are genetic differences.
Yes.
That confound the, or whatever, may be contributing to the phenotype.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay.
But predominantly for one, if you go to the next slide, isn't it predominantly with just one population or am I?
Well, yeah. So.
Except for the PC3 separating that.
Yeah. So if you look, exactly. It depends on how you look at it, but these, I don't know much about this identity by state analysis, but all these figures are based on that analysis. And it has, you know, like really strong clustering. Black and red are the two Daybab Bay populations and Fidalgo Bay are blue and green. And so there's just a little bit more mixing, it looks like, within Fidalgo Bay.
Just suggesting that there's potentially, or there is, or selection occurred with the Daybab populations on the from the parental exposure versus the Fidalgo. Is that
that's
the take home?
Okay. I mean, that's, I think, to me, this means that I shouldn't draw any conclusions, definitely in the Daybab Bay population. Maybe I could in the Fidalgo Bay, but I could explore the Fidalgo Bay expression data more, but I do want to make sure I'm not, you know, jumping to any conclusions.
Well, it's still there. It's, I think you still explore and describe it, but you just have to hit that caveat. However, you know, I'm going to say this, you probably don't want to go to the effort to then do what you suggested a few minutes ago, really see if these genetic differences are in fact, I don't even know if that's biologically possible with this species, right? I mean, you don't really know that these genetic differences are causing the differences in expression, but there's quite a high probability, right?
Yeah. So like, try to just remember this, or maybe I'll copy it. So I'm going to copy this figure, this clustering figure, and I'm going to go back to the expression data figure, clustering figure, and we can compare them. Hold on a second.
Oh, I'm getting you now. So the Daybab was really the one that had the most clear expression difference.
Yeah.
Okay. Whereas there really wasn't a tremendous expression difference in the Fidalgo.
Yep.
I mean, I guess it's all relative, but.
So again, this is PC1 and PC2 on my expression plot. And so if I were to look at PC1 versus PC3, maybe I would see a more clustering in the for the Fidalgo Bay expression. But if that's also like, basically, I think that genotype is influencing gene expression in these one-year-old offspring, but how much can we attribute to that? And can we draw other, can we like look at differences? Is it still possible that their physiology has been influenced by their parent, or is it 100% due to the family effect?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously looking at all gene expression.
Yes.
I mean, certainly in the Fidalgo group, you've got a list of differentially expressed genes, right?
Yep.
Call it whatever, ABC, and you feel somewhat confident that genetics isn't playing a huge role in Fidalgo. You could then look at that same gene ABC, and just look at it its expression and Daybab. And if you see in the same pattern, that means something.
Across the two populations.
I mean, I'm just saying is that is a possible way to account for the family effect is using, and it also bolsters what you found in the Fidalgo. If you get down to the differentially expressed genes and see them in both populations,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then whatever you don't see, I mean, it's very crude, then you could suggest that's more, could potentially has a more highly higher likelihood of being a family effect.
Are there methods to take relatedness into account when doing gene expression? Like, that's what I'm trying to Google quickly.
What macaw or that, whatever that is, doesn't that take, weren't you doing that?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it might be challenging just because the relatedness seems to maybe be split by your treatments, but if there is a way to do that analysis, then you might be throwing away like real genes of interest, but you also could like feel a lot more confident about them. Then you're not being like, I'm ignoring these ones. Yeah, so that might be something worth looking into.
But would that analysis take into consideration biology? Like for example, if you knew the SNP was in a transcription binding site of gene X, then you would have a higher, you would assume that it could potentially affect expression of it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, that's the other way. It doesn't consider like where the, right, unless I were to just isolate those locations.
Yeah. But we must be able to figure out where these SNPs are that are driving the differences, right?
Yeah, I'm sure we can.
Yeah. I mean, then you could determine if, you know, relate that annotation information back to the differentially expressed gene list. I mean, I don't know, just a lot of possibilities there to kind of tease. It's really cool. I guess that's a take on it. You've got one population that's distinct, one that's not as much, and you can leverage that information, I think, to your benefit. I think it's cool.
Yeah. The other thing is like this is one of a few sets of gene expression, you know, data that I have or comparisons that I have. I also have expression from four different larval populations or cohorts. And so I could, like, there's a lot of different avenues I could go down with this data. I could just compare among populations and ignore, you know, the whole carryover effect thing. But I don't want to like hide this data because it's it's good to report. Yeah, but I have a lot of decisions to make basically with all this stuff. Yeah. Okay. So in terms of goals, I don't really know what my next step is. I mean, I do think if I can, I might try to shave down the time of this pipeline by this joint genotyping step. I don't think is necessary for RNA-seq data. I think the GATK website has a different method where you don't do that, and it might be faster. So I'm going to try to do that with my larvae and my juveniles. And then, so that's one thing. I think maybe I should try that colony program or at least look into it.
Yeah, I have scripts of dubious 2016 me quality about how I went from a BCF to the input of colony. So yeah, that should all be on that paper. And if you have questions about it, I would be happy to dig back into it and help you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll also redo those analyses after filtering for minor allele frequency. Is there a setting that you recommend?
I mean, 5% is like pretty standard in top gen literature, but I think you have 16 samples.
Yeah.
So like one way you can sort of calculate is if you want to throw away alleles that are only seen once,
mm-hmm.
then that would be like 1/32.
Yeah.
So you want a minor allele frequency higher than 3.1%.
Okay.
Then you are only getting, loci that have the minor allele found at least twice.
Yep. Okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah, so like 4% would probably work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And then I'm going to try to figure out where to resubmit that other paper and resubmit it. And then for the epigenetic genetic paper, I thought I could just compile a list of references to include in the intro, possibly, to try to think about how to start crafting that intro. I did make some updates, Catherine, to the size-associated loci discussion paragraph. They're minor. I don't really know. I didn't want to write too much because I think our discussion could get really long. So,
cool. I can check it out.
Yeah.
And she did give herself 9 out of 10 points, just so you know, Catherine.
Yeah, so I had a paper accepted with minor revisions.
What? Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's not accepted. It is. They will accept with some very minor revisions. And so,
we call that accepted. Yeah.
Is it cheating to include that, even though it wasn't originally listed as one of my papers?
No.
Basically,
which paper was that?
This is a snapping shrimp GBS paper. Yeah. Yeah, that I started in college and finally got done.
So that date is older than 2015. So that yes, counts.
It is a lot older than 2015. Yeah, that's true.
That's awesome. All right, where are we on our list? I was going up for Laura.
I think it's used.
Oh, it's just me. I'm the last one. I'll probably write a paragraph in the Goo Duck paper. I think we'll carry that one. See how long I can carry that goal. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Good week. A lot of good stuff done. How many papers did we get out? Grace got one out. Catherine got one accepted. We got two bounce back, the Coral and Laura's. So that means two more will bounce back the other direction next week. So there's like we're all preloading for more submissions. So yeah, keep aiming too high and we'll just keep... And we'll keep going at it. All right. See, most of y'all are all of you. Everybody's welcome back at what is the science hour, where we have like less than an hour till science hour. All right. See you then.
Bye.